Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and on today's episode, we have Uttam Gowda, the founder of Captain Fresh, a tech-enabled B2B seafood marketplace. Joining Uttam in this conversation are Sudipto Sanigrahi, Vice President at Matrix, and Tarun Davda, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India. In this episode, we cover Uttam's journey from a banker to a founder of a B2B seafood marketplace, what triggered his interest in the seafood space, the most challenging parts of this business, and much more. Tune in.
Welcome, Uttam, to the first of hopefully many Matrix Moments that we shoot with you together. For our viewers, Uttam is the CEO and founder of Captain Fresh, which is a B2B seafood and aqua marketplace. Captain Fresh connects on the supply side fishermen to various forms of domestic and international demand on the buyer side. Before we delve into Captain Fresh and more into Uttam, let me confess something. That when I started investing 5 years back, and although I'm a Bengali, I never thought that a B2B seafood company would be one that I will be super excited about. And I remember when I met you for the first time, right? You sort of our first call 18 months back, I thought B2B fish company, isme interesting kya hai? And let me be honest and tell you a little bit about our B2B Matrix thesis. And you know, there are multiple B2B marketplaces out there. India is a $1 trillion retail market, so there are a lot of B2B marketplaces. And obviously, we like marketplaces that have large TAM, that has low working capital, high gross margin, good ROCE, right? But there are three things that we look in marketplaces that make marketplaces very interesting for us. First, is the marketplace truly creating economic value by disintermediating middlemen, which is connecting supply directly to buyers, and you take the middleman out and you create real economic value. Second, are you truly solving for something for the both the buyer and seller? Are you giving the seller more access to demand? And for the demand, are you giving him more choice and discovery? And third, which is the most interesting, if you see in a marketplace, we get truly excited, is the marketplace solving for quality and trust, which in an offline world, it's not possible. And interestingly, when we spend more time with you, we found all these three to be true for Captain Fresh, right? But that's our point of view. How did you, sitting in BKC in Bombay doing banking, think about leaving that job and get into B2, sort of solving the supply chain for seafood and aqua?
Thanks, Sudipto. Thank you, Tarun, for having me here. It's a great privilege to be here. And Matrix Moments has been one of my favorite podcasts. So super excited. So yeah, BKC to Captain Fresh has been a 5 year long journey, right? I think there is a lot of baking that has happened in those 5 years, from the point in time where one of those days in 2015 when I was trying to look at market scan or scan the market and see which sectors to go after, right? And I vividly remember the framework that I had used was the companies should have, it should be an unlisted company and it should have grown at least at 20% year on year revenue growth for the last 5 years. Of course, these are all mature companies. ROCE should be north of 30% and you should have a very, very nice balance sheet with a good leverage to equity mix, right? And on top of the heap, you have this interesting set of seafood exporters that emerge. And that was, the start of the tryst with this whole sector, where it kind of intrigued me in terms of what is this sector which I have never heard of, because I myself, having been in investment banking and consulting for more than 5-6 years, having covered so many sectors, I had never heard of seafood. So it was very, very intriguing, and that kind of piqued my interest, and then I deep dived into this space, right? And I had a very, very ground up approach in terms of understanding this. I remember the next 2 or 3 months where I had lined up meetings with the top 10 promoters of the Indian seafood exporters, went and met them and tried to understand what is this recipe? How are these guys, you know, staying under the radar to start with, and then ability to generate these kind of profits? And year on year, some of these businesses are 40 year, 50 year old businesses. So they're creating value every year. So I think that's the start of this entire thing. Post that, yes, I moved to Nekanthi Seafoods, which was one of the companies that I had taken, the mandate that I had taken to raise their equity capital.
As in one thing led to another, I was hired into Nepenthe to help them on the IPO mandate. Having said that, yes, while I was busy with the whole usual drill that is associated with IPO, which is filing RHP, doing road shows, all of that. But I think on the side, I also spent a lot of time in terms of tinkering around their GTMs for the US market, the China market, spending a lot of time on the floor in terms of production of frozen shrimps, and of course, a lot of time on the procurement, right? So that gave a, I would say, a good global perspective, global supply chain perspective, armed with what an operator who is successful in this trade for the last 45, 50 years, what has his playbook been, right? Those are some of the things that I could put together on top of the macro stuff that I had studied for almost, you know, 3 to 4 years before going into the sector. So I would say that's the starting point of, you know, my BKC to Captain Fresh journey, which is taken almost 4-5 years to the point when I started. Yeah, so that's how I started Captain Fresh.
Let me ask you one question, and before that I'm going to follow up to what Dada said earlier. He's a Bengali who used to eat fish. I'm a Gujarati who barely eats eggs. And I'm investing in a seafood marketplace, right? So you can imagine how much it has been for me. But it's been a fantastic journey so far, and I know we are just getting started. Before we dive in again, this is not a sector that a lot of people intuitively think of, right? And even if they do, just from the outside, it looks like a very messy sector to get into, right? With too many complexities on the ground, with a lot of local nuances. What did you do to build conviction before you finally threw your hat in the ring and said, this is what I'm committing to?
Yeah. So if you look at my career, right, post my education, if you see top half of my career was largely top-down driven, where I used to, you know, one of the things, favorite things was to read analyst reports of various sectors, right? And when I found that seafood from a top-down standpoint was very, very attractive, the big question on my mind just before starting up, you know, November 2018 to Feb of 2019, before I really made up my mind that, you know, this is going to be the place where I'm going to spend the prime of my career, you know, in terms of solving. The big question in my mind was, yes, look, this is a $400 billion global opportunity. It's a $30 billion India opportunity. Why has anyone not created a large outcome out of domestic opportunity, right? The analyst in me, to say that, look, this is the sector to go after. I think I had this whole 100-day journey that I had going through the entire supply chain. And I had a very simple heuristic during that journey that meet 5 to 6 new guys on an everyday basis, try and understand the different nuances of the business. So I traveled all the way from Gujarat to all the way to Kolkata, meeting pretty much, I think, some 30 or 40 coasts that I had met. And then I went to entire, almost the top 10 cities, wet markets, the Chintadripet to a Crawford to a Howrah to a Ghazipur Mandi to a Russell market. And I think all of this pointed to one thing that, you know, this entire business has been very, very optimal at a local level, right? Nobody has tried to connect these dots at a global level, maybe because, you know, you need to have a lot of technology to be able to do that, right? So maybe now is the time where we can possibly connect all these technology dots and some of these things can come through together. Maybe we can create a very, very optimal engine for a fresh supply chain, right? So that was the start of the thought. And I would say that in an industry where it's not as well researched, I think an entrepreneur like me can rely on a lot of primary research, a lot of first-hand information. I think for somebody like me, a macro combined with this first-hand information from the ground has kind of given me that instinct to make a lot of these design choices right in the beginning so that I reduce the amount of iteration that I do as we grow the business, right? So that's been the key in terms of the approach that I've taken right from the start. Spend a lot of time with your stakeholders. Travel, spend a lot of time with the stakeholders.
What terrified you the most when you dived in? If there was one thing that would have kept you away from this, what would have been?
No, it's enormous amount of complexity, right? Enormous amount of complexity because the supply chain is very, very, hardcore, right? Lack of better word. Fishing starts at night. Auctions happen 4 a.m. in the morning. So you need to have a part of your organization which is up and running, doing its best activities at night. and then the product comes into the city early in the morning, and you do your deliveries, that too, very time sensitive delivery. Everybody wants fish between 8 and 10 a.m. right? So you need to build a super time sensitive aggressive engine which kind of delivers, and then the entire collection engine, which is now post that the team takes over. So it's like you're running a 24 hour business, you know, and this is geographically so split, you know, spread out, because you have your team from Gujarat to Kolkata to, you know, that's the one which really scared me. And just to be honest, the largest team that I had handled till then was 3, right? And all of these self-motivated analysts who would come through to me as a banker or a consultant. So, you know, to actually build out an organization which is as disparate as this, in terms of their background, in terms of their intellect, in terms of their, you know, the amount of work they have to do, and geographically spread across time zone, that's, I think, was the complexity that kind of took me a couple of months to get my head around. But I think end of the day, it was the size of the price, and of course the purpose, the, you know, the strength of the purpose that we had in front of us. That's what gave me the conviction to kind of dive in. Yeah. So here I am.
I know sometimes we say that bankers and consultants don't do the real work and work on Excels and PPTs. I think you're an inspiration to a lot of founders will start up on how much hard work it goes to actually build conviction on the problem. But diving a little deeper, right? We all know that solving for perishable supply chains is probably the toughest problem statement, because a shelf life is 4 or 5 days versus other sort of commodities where probably shelf life is 3 months, 1 year, 2 years. And your prices fluctuate daily. And typically it's extremely difficult to solve these supply chains, right? How did you think about going about the problem of solving a perishable supply chain?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you made those the points that you have pointed out, alluded to, right? They are very, very critical. I think the most important advantage that I had when I started was that I had this 5 year of exposure to this sector, starting with a very top down, and understanding a global supply chain like this, say the US and China, and then working with an operator who used to handle the local nuances in terms of domestic procurement, etc. That kind of gave me a very simple, you know, clear set of objectives to optimize for, right? If I have to really distill, okay, what are those 3 or 4 objectives that we optimized for, was scale was paramount, right? It's like there's nothing that is as important as scale in a supply chain business which is focused on a perishable. So entire business choices that we took was optimized for scale, which meant that we said we will take large businesses first and then go after the smaller businesses later. So we are a high MOQ to low MOQ business, right? That was very counterintuitive when we began, because we remember these conversations where I used to say, why we have gone after large businesses? This is such a chunky book to go after.
And I would continue to say that demand fragmentation is important, demand fragmentation is important.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the first critical choice that we made in terms of business plan, business model, that we went after large sizes, and then now we are going down the curve, right? The second important thing in this entire piece is, how do you grade the product, right? In fact, this is one key insight that I borrowed from the global supply chain. Now, if I say that, to begin with, I said that, you know, all the global exporters, frozen exporters, had super normal ROCE, which is 30-40% ROCE with no leverage, right? And if you have to distill it down to that one or two important things that they're doing, which is resulting in that super normal profit, is that they're able to grade the supply. Right, they are taking supply as a bulk and then grade it into 4 or 5 segments, and then ability to sell to a Walmart in the US and to a Nichiré in the Japan or to a Delhaize in the Belgium, right? That's what brings that margin, super normal margin, right? So for me, when I looked at domestic market, clearly that grading as an element was missing because it's so unorganized. So top down, how do we embed grading into this entire design framework? So that was the second critical piece, right? Then the third critical piece is that comfort with heterogeneity, because supply is, in simplistic terms, it's act of God. You get supply in all forms and shapes. There are multiple dimensions of heterogeneity, and demand is also as nuanced. Kolkata a fish eater will not prefer what a Tamilian fish eater eats, and in a cosmopolitan setup like Bangalore, you have multiple micro markets. right? So how do you match supply and demand in a dynamic way, on an everyday basis, in a precise way, is the third large problem statement that we thought that if we can solve one with for scale in a capital efficient way, second, you know, grade, and then of course the whole supply demand matching, maybe we can have a large winner for this market. That's the three axes that we looked at. And in terms of technology, I think if you have to again distill in terms of what is that we have gone after to solve in the last 24 months that we have been around, is again, it's basically three things. We have tried to digitize the supply chain so that whatever happens in Porbandar in Gujarat and Digha in West Bengal, we have the same view on a real-time basis. Right, that's the first thing. And second, what we are continuously thinking and investing a lot behind is automation. How do we reduce the amount of bandwidth that is needed to embed all these functions of grading, the supply demand matching, and entire all of this in an automatic way? Right. And third one is, of course, how do you democratize the channels? Right. Today, this is one of those sectors you don't find fancy entrepreneurs participating. Right. I think thanks to some of our seniors who have come in and have raised capital, and those are the guys who are really pioneering in this space in terms of bringing that glamour back into this front end space. But largely, if you look at it, it's still 95% plus unorganized. So how do we enable more and more entrepreneurs to come into this place? So how do you democratize? How do you ensure that any guy can become a fish seller? Right. So these are the three large dimensions in which we are investing largely. Both in the technology, people, asset, all of this combined, right? That's where we are investing.
And I like the fact that you spoke about, you know, scale and grading, because for most procurement, if it's a perishable procurement supply chain, I think the juice to it is when you can go and buy everything that a farm produces or say a pond produces, right? Because that's the only time when essentially you can get the best quality price. But the challenge typically is you can buy everything if you want, but how do you sell that? And what's your answer to that?
Yeah, so I think I keep saying this internally as a founder, if there is one business problem that I've spent enormous amount of time on is how do I sell my bad quality fish, right? That's where I spend a lot of time. In fact, there's a joke that we have internally that you don't need anybody to sell good fish. They sell by themselves. So I think the important piece is that we recognized that the heterogeneity part of this entire puzzle, we recognized it very, very early in our journey. And we have been very comfortable with the fact that this is not going to be a crack one city, replicate everywhere business. This is going to be every city going to be an organism in its own way. And how do you, one, understand that and then design your strategy, right? So we were very comfortable with that approach from day zero. So even the way we have built out the distribution strategy has been very nuanced in terms of how do I enable multiple personas, multiple archetypes of sellers to work with us as a platform. That has been the constant line of thinking that we have had from day zero. So to give you a couple of interesting things that we are doing in this entire distribution strategy is now we are not thinking metro first. In fact, we are thinking how do I think of, in fact, we are just in 3 metros, but we are in 25 towns and cities. Which essentially means that for a Bangalore, I'm also in a Mysore, in a Tirupati, in a Mangalore, because these also play a very important role in the supply chain of delivering fresh fish to Bangalore, because whatever is not accepted in Bangalore, there is a market elsewhere, right? So this entire thought process of how do you layer up a core market with multiple layers of next level markets, right? That is a key insight that you have worked with. And of course, the second insight is how do you layer up multiple personas to come and sell for you? So these are the two critical things that we have thought of on the distribution side, which has given us the competence to be able to say that if there is one competency that we are building as Captain Fresh, it is ability to monetize any kind of supply better than anybody else in the market. Right? That's the, you know, in a nutshell, that's the muscle that we are building. And we believe that if this muscle gets time tested and stress tested across seasons, across multiple products, maybe we'll have a flywheel in place.
So going a bit deeper, I want to pick up on the point you just made around these sort of filler cities or the satellite cities, right? If I were to zoom out, the biggest challenge in any perishable supply chain is dump. And managing dump determines whether you have a business or not. And that can change very quickly and can turn things around very fast. Now, that's something I know you spent a lot of time just structurally organizing different aspects of the business to solve dump and make sure that it's not an afterthought. So talk a little bit about that as to how did you think and what are the elements around which you try to manage this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we always say in our business there are in fact two control points, two critical control points for our scale, right? One of the super important control points is, as you pointed out, is the dump, the management of dump. But I think that's true for any super perishable supply chain, not just in India, anywhere in the world, yeah. Right? So if I have to unpack this concept of how did we approach this dump as a concept, right? So to begin with, we said, look, how do we get customer insights as close to the source as possible, right? That is very important as a thought process because today customer insights are all embedded in the wet market level. There is nobody who is taking it to the source. So how do I take it back? So that if I further unpack, it means that how do I build a network of assets which has the ability to, you know, make this happen, right? And this network of assets also need to be layered with a, you know, tech layer which does a dynamic orchestration. Why I'm saying using all of these things is, I may have built this out in a place like Mangalore and Malpe, but then there is a flood, so you don't have supply there. So how does my network, or rather supply chain, resilient enough to handle the same thing in Kakinada or a Chirala? So how do you think modular in terms of transmitting this entire customer insight all the way back to the source in a very asset-light manner, in a modular manner, where you have all of these things embedded, right? That's the first thing. And second thing is, building out this muscle of saying that I will have the best grading capability in the market. One is I understand what is needed. Second is how do I break it down and execute at scale, where we have automations, where we have technology coming in. All of this need to be put together to execute at scale, right? So that's the second dimension in which we have worked out, where we bring in automation to do some of this grading. And the third thing is, of course, in terms of the choice of markets that we play with, where we are very, very heterogeneity first, like I mentioned earlier, that earlier we were thinking of only, let's say, online archetype of players or modern trade archetype of players or say a general trade archetype of players. Now we are releasing that condition and saying that, okay, any archetype, any persona who has the need of making money, who wants to be a micro entrepreneur. So that set of this thing. And originally we thought that no, we will take only the large urban agglomerates. Now we said no, we'll release that condition, we'll go to a tier 2 city or a tier 3 city, right? So that way we have got an entire spectrum of demand so that it matches up to that spectrum of supply that we are getting in, right? So that's the way we are thinking about dump. I would say yes, we are in that path to solve the problem. So I would say in the industry we are possibly the best equipped to solve the dump problem, but it's a work in progress. But I believe we have the thought process ready, and at a business level, if there is one problem that everybody is thinking about, it's the dump.
Yeah. Which reflects in your numbers, like you've been consistently been contribution margin positive and ensured that your working capital is less than 10 days. And if I have to take this 6 months forward, right, you will probably be at $100 million of annualized scale. What do you worry then? What breaks then, and as a founder, how do you prepare for that?
Yeah. So I think again, I keep saying this, that in this whole entire cricket match, you have one abdomen guard and one helmet, which is one is dump, the other is collection, right? You get these two, then you have the entire field to go after, right? You can play a front foot. So it's exactly those two, which is how do I manage dump and how do I manage my balance sheet or a collection risk? So in fact, these two are almost fungible. If you have to manage your dump, you can go sell in your wet market, because that persona can take any produce. But it also means that you've just moved the loss bucket from a dump to a collection, because recovering money from collection from wet market is an unsolved problem, right? So the way we are thinking about this, if we can, you know, get these two engines or these two loss buckets in control with multi-layered strategy, which is diversify your demand as much as possible, move from a credit, 7-day credit demand segments to a cash on delivery or a pre-order kind of a demand bucket, So on that you have kind of de-risked yourself on the collection side, and on the dump side, we are now in a very quality sensitive market. How do you move further down in terms of adding slightly more quality, I would say open to taking a multiple spectrum of quality demand, right? And of course, there are multiple such demand pools. If you look at a global level, you have exporters, you have frozen, all of these demand pools. So how do you get this dump as you move into the next set of demand and match the two is where we believe as we scale, we want to kind of go after this impossible mix of we are scaling, but our risk factors are taken control of, right? Which is both dump and collection. We are de-risking on both these planks. So yeah, that's the thinking.
So let me ask you another question. When we first invested, the company was really young, right? You probably, I remember it was you, and every time I called you, you were at a different port and up since like 4 a.m. Now, over the last few months, you've managed to attract some really good talent. A lot of what you said is highly complex, requires deep management and leadership bandwidth. And it's clearly not something that, you know, one or two or three people can do, right? Now, talk a little bit about how do you as a founder who's building and architecting this business, how did you think about what are the various roles that you needed to hire for? How did you go about figuring out what are the right people for these roles? How do you attract people? This is not an easy business to get quality talent, right? People look at it and say, oh, it's seafood, you know, too complex, too messy, I don't relate with it, whatever it may be, right? But to your credit, you've managed to actually pull, you know, people that would find it harder to go to any other company, and you managed to still get them, right? So what has worked for you?
Yeah, I think I have been super. If there is one thing that has gone right for us in the last 18 to 24 months, it's the quality of team that we have put together. Every day morning, I'm super excited to get up and go back to office because the kind of people that I interact with and the kind of intellect that they bring on table is really, really something that I enjoy, right? And not because Matrix is hosting this. I think one thing that I really want to credit is the powerhouse that you have built at the back end, where you are helping out companies like ours to one, continuously keep thinking about talent, right? Because for a founder, it is very hard to think about 6 months later problem or a 1 year later problem, because you're always busy with your day-to-day stuff. So thinking about talent and bringing that attention back, I think that's something that I've been very fortunate to have, you know, very strong set of partners.
I'll interrupt you there. I know you're appreciate the compliment, but I'll tell you what I told you this when you first had shared this sentiment is we do this across the board for everyone. What eventually counts is the ability of the to convert that talent. End of the day, my job is to bring somebody to the table. They're going to be working with you around the clock, right? And I think to your credit, you managed to get people who have come from very diverse backgrounds, but suddenly they all are super excited about solving the seafood problem, right? And so I think to your credit, you know, the conversion, you know, you've done probably the best job at.
Thanks, Arun. I think if I have to distill in terms of what was my input in terms of getting this output, right? Two, three things. I think I fundamentally believed that I need better quality talent to solve this problem because the complexity is so massive. When I started believing it, it also meant that I really put a lot of time in terms of myself working before that interview to say that how best this story can be sold to this gentleman. While I knew that yes, this gentleman can really be of help to us as we build out this Captain Fresh, that whole entire process and diligence in terms of building that story for that, customized for that gentleman. And I think what has genuinely worked for us is, one, of course, there's a lot of bandwidth that has gone. I think if you talk about Abhishek, who's coming from Myntra, if you talk about Venu, who's coming from LiveSpace, or the bunch of entrepreneurs, now we have got almost four or five entrepreneurs who has excelled, sold their companies off, and in their own way being successful, but still seeing that, okay, they can be part of this larger vision. I think what has worked in all of these situations is that they have found a large purpose that they can be part of. And we have been very authentic in terms of telling that story to them, saying that, look, it's a very complex problem. And if all of us come together and solve this, the price that we get at the end of this entire journey is going to be very attractive. So it's the same thing that goes into selling our story to an investor. The same kind of rigor has gone into selling this story to the employees that we have got. So today, I think I am super proud about the kind of technology team that we have built together. For example, today we have four people, the initial four hires, all of them have been head of engineering at four different organizations. So if I had thought about this 12 months, 18 months ago, it was sounding super impossible to get a kind of talent, especially in a kind of environment that we are today, where, you know, there's so much of capital available and tech talent is, there's a supply deficit and so much competition, right? So I think that's what has gone right, where we have got the initial set of layers who are more than anything else, they are the believers, right? You get the belief part right, I think they're going to take care of the rest.
Super interesting, and I have to agree. I think the kind of talent that has joined the company in the last 4 months is amazing to see. And you spoke a little bit about the vision, right? The vision which is inspiring people to join Captain Fresh. In your mind, what's the long-term vision and ambition for you?
So given I had this benefit of coming top-down and spending a lot of time in the global supply chain and working with some of the companies like Nishire, Movi, and Trident, there was a lot of, I would say, global large thinking that we had in terms of how do you build such a large business out of India? Because India fundamentally is the second largest supplier in the world, and this is a supply deficit market. You can't get a better mix than this, where the market is supply deficit, and India is such a strong supplier, or at least well endowed to supply, right? So how do you solve, debottleneck some of these friction points and create a large supplier first community? So that is what the starting point was. But I think as we start, you know, peel off the layer of this opportunity, what we are also thinking, and even our vision is getting emboldened, is that this can be a global platform. It's a global problem that we are solving, and already we are getting a lot of inbound interest. Somebody in Ireland is reaching out saying that this is the same problem they're also facing. So some of the choices that we have made in terms of tech and network design, can that be borrowed there so that they can use this platform elsewhere? So things like that are coming in, which is essentially meaning that maybe we can build a largest fresh platform which is relevant to the entire world, starting with India, which is possibly gives you the most complex problem to solve, and after this believe that problem will only get simplified as we move out of India, right? So that's the vision, where how can we build the largest animal protein company in the world in terms of, which is supplier first in approach.
Fantastic to hear. I know whenever we speak we speak for hours, but I think we're coming to the end of this chat. Before we leave, what seafood do you prefer?
Actually, to begin with, when I started this business, I was not such a big seafood guy. But I think now I have started to like the white pomfret, sears of the world. I love the marine fishes, particularly white pomfret, sear. Yeah.
Got it. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Uttam and Tarun, for taking the time out for this. It's a privilege to host you on Matrix Moment, and I'm sure this is the first of many that we do. But thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Sudipto. Thanks, Tarun.
Sure, thank you, man. Thank you. It's been, like I said, it's the start of a fantastic journey. I don't think we could be more privileged to be in business with you. I have learned so much in such a short time already, just working with you and seeing the way you operate. And, I think the joy in our business, you spoke about what keeps you excited, right? The joy in our business is when you find a passionate entrepreneur who is out there every morning looking to change the world and is doing it in a way where everybody around them is just wanting that person to succeed. And I think you're one of them. So
thank you so much.
Really,
sir.
Really, really excited about this journey. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Sudipto.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.